we're holding on page Yud Zayin in Megillah and also Os Yud Zayin. Bottom page Yud Zayin. Still in the middle of Darshaning the Psukim in the Megillah. We left off that after Ahasuerus crowned Esther as queen. So it said over there he made a big party, Ves Mishta Esther, and he gave rebates on taxes to everybody in the kingdom and so on and so forth. And the Gemara had explained that the purpose of all of that was that he would do all these things in Esther's name, figuring that way that might induce her to tell him what nation she's from, where she was still keeping that secret because Mordechai had told her to. So now he figured, for example, he's going to try to get out of her what nation she's from, and then that way he'll give like extra benefits to that nation. Like this, for example, he's making a party for everybody, and he's giving rebates on taxes to everybody. But if you actually tell me what nation you're from, then I'll do even better for your nation specifically. So all of that was with that purpose in mind, and still she wouldn't tell him. So now Os Yud Zayin continues, or the Kovitz Basilis Shenis Vagomer. The pasuk continues, when the Basilis were gathered for a second time. Now, why is Ahasuerus gathering Basilis a second time? If he's already found Esther, he's already found the one that he wants as queen, why is he gathering Basilis again as though he's going to start the whole process over? Meaning, Ozel Shokol Eitzim Mordechai. What happened was Ahasuerus, he's very frustrated. He wants to worm the secret out of Esther, and he can't. So he goes to ask advice from Mordechai. First of all, he knows that Mordechai had raised her. Mordechai is also smart, so he figured that he'll be the one to be able to tell him. What should I do to get her to tell the secret? Mordechai tells him, "Ein ish miskanes ela b'yerach chavata." You know how you make a woman jealous is with the thigh of another woman. Meaning, in other words, if she sees that you're going to be having relations with somebody else, that you might take another wife besides her, then that might get her jealous enough to reveal the secret. So you don't do that. So that gave Ahasuerus the idea now to gather girls together again and see if he's going to pick another one as a second wife or a sub-queen or whatever you'd call it. Even so, Esther did not tell the secret. As the pasuk continues, Ein Esther Mageras Melata Ves Amma, she still wasn't telling her nationality or her people. So why was Mordechai even giving Ahasuerus advice in the first place is because Mordechai figured that there are various reasons Mephoshim give why in the first place Mordechai told her not to reveal what nation she's from. One of them we've learned previously, Marashah says he figured that Ahasuerus is not going to care for her and he's going to send her. After all, she doesn't want to be there in the first place, and Mordechai doesn't want her to be there. So Mordechai figured to begin with, if she doesn't tell where she's from, then Ahasuerus is going to say, well, what am I doing marrying a girl from an unknown family in an unknown nation? Why am I bothering? And he'll send her away. So now Mordechai figured in a similar vein, maybe Ahasuerus will find somebody else that he likes better, and then he'll send Esther, and she'll be out of this horrible situation. So that was why he gave the advice. Other Mephoshim point out that a related idea is that Mordechai Bechlal was wondering. I mean, he knew the Rashi mentions on the Psukim, and Rashi mentions elsewhere that that you have Mordechai realized. Obviously, this whole thing was orchestrated min hashamayim. It's not normal. It's not natural that a tzedekis like Esther would wind up in the king's palace of a rosha like Ahasuerus. It must be there's something unusual going on here min hashamayim. So now he wanted to do kind of like a further test. Well, is it really? If in fact Ahasuerus goes through another round of choosing among girls, and nevertheless he sticks with Esther, then we'll know, okay, it really is Min HaShemayim, and that's that. She's meant to be there, and we don't know what the Eibishter's purpose is yet, but eventually we'll find out. But if Ahasuerus sends her free, so much the better then. Okay, and it didn't work because in fact she didn't tell him. So now let's talk about this point that Esther is keeping the secret for so many years. It's a tremendous mila of hers. So Amar Rav Chama or Rav Elazar, my dichtiv, what does it mean a pasuk in Iyov? Lo yigra mitzadik ena. Hashem does not withhold his eyes from the tzadik. In other words, Hashem is looking after what the tzadik has done to pay him back accordingly. The pasuk continues that Hashem makes that kings will sit on the throne. That means b'schar tznius shahoya b'rochel, because in the reward for the tznius that Rochel showed in the matter with the secret passwords with her and Yaakov, as the Gemara is going to give the details now, zachs of yotzer men of shol, she had this chus that shol descended from her, who also had that quality over schar tznius shahoya b'shol, and in turn because shol showed that quality, zachu b'yotzes menu Esther, therefore we have the schos that Esther was defended from him. So Rashi explains the lo yigra mitzadik einov is maloshin einayim. Hashem's eyes are always focused on what the tzaddik does, and Hashem is looking forward. It may take a long time. Hashem is very patient, and he may take a long time until the reward is given, but eventually the reward will be given for what the tzaddik did. So Rashi understands einov maloshin einayim, maloshin Hashem's eyes. Marsha says it can also mean einov maloshin ke'ein, in a similar vein too. Because Rachel showed such exceptional tznius in keeping the secret when in the appropriate way, therefore Hashem brought from her family came an appropriate reward, is that Shol should be her descendant, and in turn, because Shol had that Mila, then therefore Esther descended from him. That's the Ves Malachim Lakisei that Hashem makes, that kings will sit on thrones as a result of what their ancestors, the tzaddikim, did. And Marsha points out, you know, with Esther, you have more than just that she didn't reveal the secret for all those years. We see also how the Megillah describes Lo Biksha Dover, she didn't want anything of the various things they're offering her to when she's getting ready to go to Achashverosh and so forth. So this is all showing that she had a tremendous degree of tznius, and for that she was zoicha to actually become the queen. Marsha also points out, by the way, where do you actually see in the psukim that she was descended from Shol? You don't really. I mean, we know that she and Mordechai were cousins. She was Bas Dodo. There was, by the way, a popular notion that he was her uncle and she was his niece. But based on the way it says in the psukim, it's not so, because it says that she was Bas Dodo, the daughter of his uncle. So where that notion comes from that she was his niece, Vesach Nisht, unless I guess people figure that if he took her in, then you know you don't usually take in your cousin. An uncle was more likely to taken his niece, but anyway, the psukim say over there that we know Mordechai is ben Yor ben Shimi ben Kish. Now Kish was the father of Shol, but so fine, he's obviously from the family of Shol, but it doesn't actually, when it says that he's descended from Shimi, now Shimi was not actually a descendant of Shol, or at least it doesn't come out from the psukim that he was a relative of Shol, which is why he held it very badly against David that he had taken over the kingship, and as we learned a few days ago, he cursed him and then threw dirt at him and reviled him and whatever, and then called him names, but he wasn't actually necessarily a descendant of Shol. But based on our Gemara over here, it comes out that in fact Mordechai and Esther are literally descendants of Shol, and in fact in the Targum on the Megillah it gives a complete listing of Mordechai's ancestors all the way back to Binyamin, and includes Shol in there. Anyway, so might Sniyusa to have a Baruchel. Where's the exceptional tznius that we see in Rochel? So, dichtiv, let's go back to when Yaakov first meets Rochel. Vayaged Yaakov l'Rochel ki achio v'yohu. He informed Rochel that he's her father's brother. The question is, v'chi achio v'yohu? He's not her father's brother. Her father is Lavan. Yaakov's not his brother. V'halei ben achois v'yohu. He's the son of he's Lavan's nephew. He's the son of Yaakov's sister Rivka. So what does he mean by that? Ki achi of Yahu. Now, Marsha refers over here to what he says on this. This Gemara is also brought in Rav Basra. Marsha points out, look, of course, a lot of times we have in Psukim where it uses the word och to mean a relative and lav dafka a brother. But the Gemara is bothered by, in that case, then why does he need, if you're going to say that it just means that he's a relative of Lavan, just as much as he's a relative of Lavan, he's a relative of Rivka. So then it could just say, ki achiyahu, that he is her och, meaning he's her brother. Why mention achiyaviyah in the first place? Turei Evin on Al Gemara says a little bit differently. He says that in that case, then why would it have to say both, that ki achiyaviyahu v'chi ven Rivkahu, where he continues that he's the son of Rivka. So then why mention the words ki achi of Yahu in the first place? So what it means is like this, Ela kiven de osa v'ama ben Rivkana. So Yaakov shows up over there in Haran, and he meets up with Rachel, and he tells her, and he tells her, Omer le amai osis. So she asks him, what'd you come here for? Omer lo. So he asks her, I came to find a wife. Min sivasli, are you willing to marry me? Sure, I'm willing to marry you, says Rachel. Ella Abba Ramayhu, but you should know my father Lavan is the famous swindler and trickster Lavan. You're not going to be able to hold out against him. He's going to end up tricking you, and you're not going to be smart. You're not going to be wise to his ways, and you're going to end up getting taken advantage of. Of Allah. So now, when Yaakov says Ki Achi Aviyahu means Iramayhu, if he's going to be a cheater. And Ahua no Brahmausa, I'm his brother, I'm his equal in being able to swindle and being able to cheat. So yes, I will be a match for him. So she asks him, are tzaddikim like you allowed to act in a deceitful way? You're saying that your Lavan's equal in trickery and deceit like that. Are you a tzaddik? Are you allowed to act that way? Omalo, he says, yes, ain't dichtiv, as you have in the Pasuk. Im novar tisborer, the Pasuk is talking about how Hashem acts towards people, but we understand from that this is a midah that we can use as well. With the novar, which means the clean, pure person, the word bar means clean and pure, like nashku bar in typical days of Tehillim. So novar means the person who acts purely and cleanly. Tisborer, Hashem, you will act with them in a pure, clean way. The im ikesh, and with the crooked person, tispatel, you will act in a crooked way. So you see that, yes, when you're dealing with a swindler like Lavan, then yes, sometimes you have to use his tactics. So Yaakov asks her, how would he plan to trick me? Amrale, so she tells him, Isli achosid kshishaminai, I have an older sister, Leah, v'leminsivli mikama, so he's not going to allow me to marry you ahead of her. As in fact, later on, Lavan tells him, lo yo'osachein b'mkemein. Which, by the way, there is, to a certain extent, that has validity of Pialocha. There is a concept, other things being equal, that a younger sister shouldn't get married, even a younger sibling shouldn't get married before an older one. There's many minus from the Rebbe over the years when people were doing that, when people were doing Shidduchim and they had an older sibling who wasn't yet, the Rebbe would always tell them to ask Mechila first and to ask permission from the older sibling first before they do. So there is a certain, even though it's Lavan HaRasha, it's saying it, but since it's recorded in the Torah, there's a certain truth to it. Anyway. Primarily, as we see in the Pasuk, it applies to siblings of the same gender, brothers or sisters. But the Rebbe would also, in Heroist people, would also do it also when, for example, it was a younger brother getting married ahead of an older sister, or vice versa. Then also ask Mechila by them first. So she tells him when that day comes, when it comes the time for the chuppah, ma'ayalah l'gabach, then Lavan is going to bring in Leah instead and pass her off as me. So you got to look out for that. Ma also Yaakov. So what did Yaakov do to try to avoid that? Masala simonim l'Rachel. So he gave Rachel simonim. He gave her secret passwords which only she's going to know. And that way, if on the night of the wedding they bring him Leah, then he'll find out. There is a vort that says that the simonim were actually that he taught her the three mitzvahs that apply to women. Chal and nida had lokas on there. So there is such a vort on that. I don't remember the mocker of it, but whatever the case. When that day or that night came, and sure enough, Lavan did as Rachel suspected he was going to, and brought in Leah instead to be the kala. So Rachel said to herself, now my sister is going to be embarrassed. She's not going to know the passwords, and she's going to get embarrassed. Miyad oisin simonim shenosin Yaakov l'Rachel masartin Rachel l'Leah. So right away, then, the simonim that Yaakov gave Rachel, Rachel in turn gave them over to Leah. So that's the tznius that we're talking about, that she had the tznius to not make a piersum of the matter, that she gave her the simonim in order to spare her sister embarrassment and was not mefarsim it even afterwards. In fact, I once saw a vert, I don't remember the mocker of it, So what do we have? We know that afterwards, Rachel for many years was barren, and finally, Vayishma Elokim El Rachel. Finally, the Eibishter listened to her tefillas, and she became pregnant with Yosef. So what was it? You have right before that in the Pesukim, you have the story of the Dudoy. So what do you have over there? That Rachel asks Leah, can I have some of the Dudoyim? And Leah tells her, Ham ach kach dechas ishi, it's not enough you took my husband, but lo kachas gamas Dudoy b'ni. Now you consider, what do you mean? What do you mean? Lachachas is ishi. Rachel could have very well said at that point, what do you mean ishi? He was my husband first before he was supposed to be your husband. The only reason he's your husband is because I did you a favor and gave you the simanim. But she didn't. Even then, she kept quiet and didn't bring that up to Leah. That's also the tznius that the Gemara is talking about over here, that she held herself back to not even say such a thing, and that was the schus that that she finally had a child. So v'hainu d'chtiv, v'hi b'burka b'hi. Yeah, she had Yosef, yeah, and later, yeah. So v'hainu d'chtiv, v'hi b'burka b'hi nehi Leah, that's what the pasuk means when it says, and it was in the morning, and behold, she was Leah. What does that mean? Baldad hashta lav Leah. So what, up until now, wasn't she Leah? She was Leah the night before as well. Ela mitoch simonim shemosu Yaakov l'Rachel, the Rachel masarta l'Leah, because Yaakov had given Rachel the simonim, and in turn she gave them over to Leah, lo have a yodad hashta. Then Yaakov, Pasha, didn't realize until the following morning. So therefore, in the morning, he discovered v'hinehi Leah. By night, in effect, she wasn't Leah. As far as he knew, it was Rachel. A number of Mephoshim, by the way, deal with the point. There's a Gemara in Nedarim that mentions that there's a concept called Bnei Tmura, when a husband and wife are having relations, and one of them, for example, the husband, let's say he has two wives, and he's thinking of one while having relations with the other, it has a very negative effect on the child. So how do we have that? I mean, Reuven was conceived from this on the face of it. So how does that work? Reuven, after all, being one of the Shvatim, and there's a lot of different answers, including it's different here when it's Min HaShemayim. And there is, in fact, an explanation that's one reason why Reuven was relegated to Eivor HaYarden, and there's a lot of different explanations of why it's not an issue of Bnei Tmura over here. Whatever the case, the point is, so we see that whole story. So we see that Rachel showed an exceptional degree of tznius in this whole matter. L'fichach zachsev yotzer men shol. Therefore, as we're saying, she had this schus that Shaul HaMelech descended from her. In fact, there is also that Mephoshim bring up the question, how is it that Yaakov didn't recognize her voice? So there is actually an explanation that I remember once seeing, that she actually hid out in the room over there, and whenever Yaakov said anything to Leah, then Rachel would answer, so he wouldn't be able to tell. But other than that, the vote would be that maybe part of her tznius was they had talked so little before that, although all the years that Yaakov had been working there, that he probably didn't recognize her voice. But there is also an explanation that's brought about it, that what it was is, look, Yaakov, as far as he knew, the only one who knows the simonim is Rachel. So even if he hears a slightly different voice, he's going to think, al derech like Yitzchak did in the previous generation. You know, here, hakol kol Yaakov, ayadayim yidei Esav. He has his reasons to be suspicious, but nevertheless, the fact that he felt that it really feels like Esav swayed him, and you know what, it really must be Esav after all, and I'm just mistaking the voice. So Yaakov then, in that case, it would come out, made the same kind of mistake. So that's the schus, that's the tznius that Rachel showed, which in the schus of that, she had a descendant show. Now, in turn, where do we see that Shol showed such a degree of tznius? Dichtiv. So you have the psukim describe over there how Shol and his servant were going and looking around for some lost donkeys that belonged to his father, and they're going all over the place, and they can't find them, and they finally go to Shmuel, and Shmuel anoints Shol as king, and then tells him to go home. So Shol finally arrives home. Dichtiv. So Shol's uncle, the pasuk says, saw him, was the first one to see him, and he said, "Nu Shol, where'd you guys go? What happened?" And vayomer Shol al doidoi. So Shol said to his uncle, "Hagid higid lanu kinyim su asons." The navi Shmuel told us that the donkeys have been found. But Ves Dvara Malochala Higid Layashara Mashmuel. But he didn't tell him anything about the kingship. Here you had big news that happened while he was away, that he had been anointed as king, but Shol didn't volunteer the information on his own. He had that sense of tznius as Marsha brings in this connection. You have the Pasuk in Mishle that expresses this idea, Yahalocha Zorv Leificha. A stranger, so let somebody else praise you, not your own mouth. So he waited until, as the psukim go on to describe, Shmuel gathered everybody together and made it official in front of everybody that Shol has been chosen and has been chosen by Hashem. But Shol himself didn't divulge the information because of the sense of tznius that he had. In fact, Maharsha points out, we also find later on in Shol's life, we find he had a sense of tznius also as far as tznius of the body. where you have where it says over there when he went in at one point when he went into the cave to go to the bathroom, he went into a cave within a cave and so forth, as far as possible away from the road in order to be in a sneeristic position when he's going to the bathroom. And that was when David and his men were hiding out in the back of the cave and so on and so forth. So you see also the exceptional sneers that Shaul had. But Marashah says here the Gemara wants to focus on the sneers that we see that he had before he even became king. So so in the schus of that, so therefore we have the schus that Esther in turn descended from him. Now Esther Maihi, and where do we see Esther's sense of tnius dichtiv? Ain Esther, my geras melad tabes hama, because the pasuk is saying that Esther didn't reveal her nationality or her people. And in fact, Iyun Yaakov and Eitz Yosef both point out, you know, when you get down to it, how is that a proof that she had such a degree of tnius? Maybe she didn't tell because Mordechai told her not to tell. So so the vote would be, so Eitz Yosef brings in turn from Yefei Torah, which is one of the major Pirushim on Medrash Rabbah, that to begin with, why did Mordechai tell her not to, is figuring that that way Achashverosh won't want to marry her. Once she's already married to Achashverosh, it's not going to help anyway. She might as well tell it. And still she didn't tell it. So that shows her natural sense of tnius. And Iyun Yaakov says also, we just said before, that Mordechai himself gave advice to Achashverosh to go find another wife. So, and you would think, like Mordechai said to Ahasuerus, you know, a woman is naturally going to be jealous of that kind of thing, and that's going to induce her to tell. And so she might say to herself, you know, obviously Mordechai doesn't care whether I tell anymore, because he's trying to manipulate things to make it that I should tell, and still she didn't. That shows her sense of tnius, not just because Mordechai told her, but because she realized on her own that it's the right thing to do. Okay. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, or Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Rabbi Chanina, here's another thing that we can learn. We quoted before the pasuk lo yigra mitzadik einav, that Hashem does not withhold his eyes from the tzadikim, or as Marashah had said, that einav also means Hashem does not withhold the appropriate type of reward for the tzadikim. And that's what we mentioned, tznius that Rachel had, from which therefore Shaul descended from her, and the tznius that Shaul had, and therefore Esther descended from him. So now Rabbi Eliezer, or Rabbi Elazar, continues, Kshak Kodesh Bo, we also learn something else from that pasuk and from the following pasuk. When Hashem decides that a certain person should have greatness, then Hashem decides that it should be for him and his children and his children's children until the end of generations. Meaning, in other words, that you have, let's say, for example, here with Shaul, it should have been, once Hashem chose him as king, it should have been that the kingship of the Jewish people would remain in his, or at least some greatness among the Jewish people would remain in his family forever. Shenema, the posik that we quoted before, Lo Yigra Mitzadik Einav, where the middle of the posik said, Ves Melochim Lakise, that Hashem puts kings on the throne, the posik finishes off, Vayeshivim Lanetzach, Hashem makes them sit forever by Babu. And they are elevated. So we see that Hashem makes that it shouldn't just be Malachim Lakise as a one-time thing, but Lanetzach, that it's going to be forever. However, but then if the person acts in a gaivadika way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashpilai, then Hashem lowers him down, Shenemar, as the next pasuk continues there in Iyov, the im asurim bazikim, but if they are tied up in chains, yilochtun b'chavle oni, then they will be trapped in ropes of poverty. Meaning, in other words, that because Rashi explains the word asurim is maloshin yisurim. So if they allow themselves to be too proud, vayibohu, they become too great and too proud, then the result is bim asurim, then Hashem brings on them yisurim, and they descend from their high position and they end up in a poor situation. Marsha says another meaning as well. Is the word asurim can also mean something which is osur, as we find, for example, with Shaul, where he did something osur by having by failing to kill Agag and wiping out Noiv Irakonim. So in other words, Marsha says it's one or the other. Either if vayigbahu or ve'im asurim bazikim can also mean or if they act in a way of isur, then bazikim, they wind up in chains and they wind up descending from their high position and becoming poor, which happened to Shaul's family. In the end, you have, in fact, out of Shaul's whole family, the only one, ultimately the only survivor that was left eventually was Mephibosheth. And the pasuk describes over there, he was lame, his legs were broken, and he had to eat. He was eating by David's table. So David and then Psukim over there gave him everything that used to belong to Shaul because he's the only heir left. But still, for a while over there, he was very poor, and only because David had Rachmanus on him did he go back to an elevated position. Going back to the Psukim of the Megillah now, the Pasuk says, Ves Mama Mordechai Esther Osa. The Pasuk says that Esther was doing, even while she was in the palace, she was doing what Mordechai said. So it doesn't just mean to not tell what nationality she's from, because that the Pasuk already said, Ein Esther Mageras Meladda. So the Ves Mama Mordechai Esther Osa, the Gemara's understanding refers to something else where she would follow Mordechai's instructions. She would show her blood of Nida to the Chachamim, meaning, in other words, Mordechai representing the head of the Chachamim. So now Marsha brings actually from the Targum. It wasn't only that she was keeping all the mitzvahs. She was keeping all the mitzvahs that women are chayav in. She was being careful about Shabbos. We talked about the other day about the 7 maid servants that she had, that she was using them to keep track of when Shabbos is, and so on and so forth. But we're saying, Marsha says, the Gemara is focusing on Dam Nidus because that became better known. Since she was sending samples of whenever she had a stain where there's a question whether it's Dam Nidah or not, and she was sending it to one of the Chachamim there in Shushan, so it became well known, it became better known among the Chachamim that she's keeping all the mitzvahs. So other things like Shabbos and Kashrus and whatever they wouldn't have had any way of knowing. But this, they could see based on the evidence of the fact that she's actually sending them shaylos. Ion Yaakov also points out that another reason to focus on that one is because it means that she didn't think to herself, well, listen, I'm the queen. I should have to deal with such dirty, disgusting things. Let me delegate it to somebody else. No, she personally arranged to send it to the Chacham. Ion Yaakov refers to the Gemara in Brachas, tells us that David HaMelech, in a similar vein, David HaMelech says on himself, Shomer Nafshi, Tichosidani, he says that I'm the same thing. Women bring me shilas about damnida and miscarriages and whatnot, and I personally deal with them, get my hands dirty with them, rather than saying I'm a king and it's beneath my dignity. So now we're saying Esther acted in the same way as far as her shilas. And in fact, Ion Yaakov says that's why it uses the expression Mamar Mordechai. Why not Sivui Mordechai or something? This isn't something that Mordechai actually explicitly told her she has to do, but she had heard over the years Mordechai telling other women about the dinim of Taras HaMishpacha, and therefore she knew to follow that. She knew to follow that on her own, even when she's in the palace. Then the pasuk continues, Kasher Hoisa Ba'omna Itay, the same way as it was when she was being raised by Mordechai. So what does that mean? Amar Rav Abba or Rava Bar Lima Malama Chaisa in Medes Mecheikah Shal Achashverosh. She would get up from being in Achashverosh's lap, meaning on the face of it, having relations with him, but Tevelas, and she would Tovel the Yeshevas Mecheikah Shal Mordechai, and then she would sit in Mordechai's lap. So basically, what it means is, in other words, so Rashi apparently understands it at face value. He or she had been having relations with Achashverosh under duress. It's not like she wanted to. The Gemara, in fact, in a few places mentions the concept Esther Kauka Olam Avoy. It was a complete case of oiness. The Gemara discusses in some places, you know, we know you have Avodah Zorah, Gilui Arayos, Shlichus Dama, the big three a person has to be Moser Nefesh for. How is it that Esther is not Moser Nefesh to not have relations with a Goy, with Achashverosh? And the Gemara answers that she was Kauka Olam. With her, it's a passive thing. Later on in the parak, the Gemara discusses there was a point kasher avadi avadi, but that's another matter. Right now, though, we're talking about during her first few years over there, it's completely an onus. So therefore, Rashi understands then. So now she's going on toveling. So it shouldn't be disgusting to Mordechai that he or she just had relations with a goy, and now she's coming and sneaking over to him. So therefore, she would tovel. Not in other words that she's required to tovel up yalacha, but she would be doing it. Rashi says mitzad nekius, machnas nekius. How she's able to steal away to get to Mordechai without anybody getting in trouble, by the way. I mean, the pashtus, you could say that since, again, you know, she had been raised by Mordechai, fine, Achashverosh didn't know that she was his niece and that they had been married, or his cousin, rather, as we said before, and that they'd been married for a period of time, like we learned before in the Gemara, but he knew that they had a relationship after all, because he was her foster father, so it's a natural enough thing that every so often she's going to want to go and see him. So therefore, that didn't necessarily arouse any suspicion. Tosfos, though, brings up another issue that you don't have havchana over here. We know there's a halacha that a woman has to be, if a woman, for whatever reason, has had relations with more than one man, there has to be chodshei avchana, there has to be a minimum of 3 months between one and the other. One example is when a woman is widowed or divorced, she has to wait 3 months before she can remarry. If it's a matter of yibum, she has to wait 3 months to do yibum, and so on and so forth. And so over here, you don't have. Achshverosh, after all, wants her all the time. So where's the 3 months? So Tosfos says, shahosim shameshes b'moich. She was using moich, she was using some kind of absorbent material to prevent becoming pregnant from Achshverosh, and therefore there wouldn't be necessary any chodshei avchana. Now, the fact is, it does say later on she gave birth to Daryavish with Achashverosh. So how does that? So either at one point the moich failed, or there are mephoshim that talk about maybe at some point she stopped using it. At one point she may have stopped using it in particular because at some point she found out with Ruach HaKodesh, the Gemara later on mentions that she was a Neviah, Mordechai may have told her or whatever, that her son is going to, that her son with Achashverosh is the one who's going to be giving instructions to continue the rebuilding of the Beis Mikdash. So in that case, then don't bother using the Moich anymore. Let that son be born so that eventually the Geula of the Jewish people will be complete. Tamar Shor discusses this, goes together with the previous piece about Mara Dam Nida in terms of why she's showing Dam Nida. There's no need for it when she's with Achashverosh. It's not like Achashverosh keeps the dinim anyway, but it's more so that when she goes to Mordechai, then she knows when she's Tohar or not. With that said, though, there are the Maral mentions, and Ben Yehoyada also says that maybe Yesheves Becheka Shom Mordechai doesn't actually mean having relations with Mordechai, which then you have Tosfos's problem about Chodesh Avchana. Maybe it means only that she would go and they'd hug and kiss or whatever. They'd be able to have their private time together, but not necessarily to actually have relations. So that would deal with Tosfos's issue about Chodesh Avchana. There is Bechlal, we've talked about also before, what the Zohar says, that she would send a shed in her place to Achashverosh. So there's quite a bit of discussion about that, whether that's necessary based on what we're saying over here. If so, then what does she need to toivel for? Then it was the shed with Achashverosh every time and not her. So there is, in fact, there are explanations that doesn't literally mean a shed. It means kind of, you know, within each person, you have there's toiv and ra in every person. So her ra aspect is the part of her that's having relations with Achashverosh. Meanwhile, it's only one physical body. The toiv of her is the part with Mordechai, but still it's only one physical body, and therefore you need moich and chod she'avchana and everything that we're talking about. Okay. Pasuk continues, by Yomi Mahem, it's 50, yeah, we saw it now. By Yom HaMahim, Mordechai Yoshe B'Shar HaMelech, in those days when Mordechai was sitting at the king's gate, Kotzach, Big Son of Seresh, so Big Son and Teresh got angry at Mordechai, at Achashverosh, and they were planning to assassinate him. So the Omer of Acha, or of Chia, Ba'aba, Omer of Yechanan, you have examples in history, Hiktzif HaKadosh Baruch Hu Adonim Alavodim, there was an example in history where Hashem made a master angry at his servant, Lassus, Ritzon Tzadik, in order to accomplish something that a Tzadik wants to do. Va'avodim ala deneihem, and you have another example in history where Hashem made servants angry at their master, Lassus, Ritzon Tzadik, or Nes la Tzadik. The same thing, in order to accomplish what the Tzadik wants, or in order to make a nest for the Tzadik. The examples are Adonim ala vodim dichtiv, Pare Kotzef ala vodim. You have that Pare was angry at the Sara Mashkim and the Sara Oifim and threw them in jail. And the result of that was that Yosef eventually was elevated. And Lassus with Sain Sadiq in order to accomplish what a Sadiq wants. Umanu Yosef, namely Yosef, Dichtiv Shamiton and Nar Ivri the Gomer, as the Sara Mashkim ends up telling Pare that there was a young Jewish boy over there and he interpreted our dreams, etc. So it was literally with Sain Sadiq in the sense that we know, Marshall points out, Yosef asked the Sara Mashkim to remember him. So there literally was Lassus with Sain Sadiq that Hashem arranged the whole thing in the first place that Pare should get angry at his servants. And the point is, in other words, that you have to think of it. You have to think of it. Eitz Yosef points out, I mean, B'derech HaTeva, okay, we know that Pare found a pebble in his bread and he found a fly in his glass of wine. Ad kedekach, though, that he'd be angry at these people, the head of the butlers and the head of the bakers, and throw them in jail. So it was Lassus with Sain Tzadik because in order to accomplish what the Tzadik wants, and in order to accomplish, ultimately, to get Yosef out of jail. It may also mean, by the way, I mean, I don't see any of the Mefarshim discussing it, but we have earlier also, Rashi mentions on the Psukim over there, that everybody was still for years talking about the whole scandal with him and Potiphar's wife, that she was spreading the rumors. So now the Eved brought about this thing with the Sana Mashkim and the Sara Oifim, so there'll be new headlines about that, and they won't be talking about Yosef anymore. So that's also Lassus with Saint Tzaddik to accomplish what the Tzaddik wants, that the Mitzrayim don't keep on talking about him. Agav, by the way, worth mentioning in that connection, something that the Medrash says on it, that when that whole matter with Potiphar's wife happened, but Yosef said on himself the pasuk that we say in Tehillim, "Cherpas novel al tisimein." He said, "Don't make me that I should have to be a cherpa, that I should be embarrassed and reviled by the novel, by the degenerate, disgusting people." Meaning, in other words, he's saying, and David HaMelech later on says about himself, and we Jewish people say in old generations, yeah, we know we're not always acting 100% the way we should. At least, fine, the Eibishter, if you have to bring us to Cherpa, then at least let it be from somebody who deserves to be the kind, who's worthy of the kind to give us Musar about it, not the novel, not the people who themselves are the most disgusting, degenerate people, and they're the ones who accuse us of what they themselves are doing, as we know, Adayem Azer, we can read every day in the headlines and then see that. So that's all part of this Cherpas novel that Yosef is asking, and every Yid asks in every generation, that at least it shouldn't have to be that the Nevolim, that the Mitzrayim and everybody like them in later generations are dafka the ones who are making fun of us and claiming we're the good moral people and you guys not. Yeah. Anyway, so that was the example of a master being angry at his servants in a way that you would b'chlal not have expected in order to accomplish what Yosef wanted. Avodim ala dinehem, and where do we see the other way around that the servants were angry at their master to accomplish something for a tzaddik? Dichtiv kotzap bixan vasera shnei sarisei melech mishomer asaf. They got angry at Achashverosh, and lasis with soin tzaddik was to accomplish the will of the tzaddik of Mordechai or Nesla tzaddik or Manu Mordechai, namely Mordechai. Dichtiv vayivoda adovel Mordechai, as the pasuk continues, that Mordechai found out about it, and everything developed from that. Maushah points out, really, the Lashon Rotzen Tzaddik doesn't seem to be so precise over here. It's not like Mordechai asked for this to happen, but nevertheless, the Eibishter did it in order to make a nest for him. There is, though, Eitz Yosef brings, though, a point that, after all, that Big Son and Teresh, actually, it's brought in various places, they were actually relatives of Haman. So like this, Mordechai wanted, he knew already what Haman is, and that he is davening to the Eibishter to get rid of him. So this getting rid of Bigson and Teresh, who are Haman's relatives, is the first stage in that. And therefore, yes, you can say it actually was Ritzon Tzaddik. It was the will of the Tzaddik that they should be eliminated, and eventually that can be the vehicle by which Haman is also eliminated. Agav, by the way, on that pasuk, Kotzaf Mordechai, Kotzaf Big Son Maseresh, the Rabag points out on the pasuk, we'll learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem, how Mordechai found out, because they were speaking in Lashon Tursi, and he understood it. But the Rabag points out another thing also. It's more the fact that he saw that they were angry in the first place that made him realize that there's something afoot over here and to go investigate further. Yom Yem Mashiach Go'ola, Zion of the Bez. So when it comes to dividing up Eretz Yisrael, you have the pasuk La'ela Techolik Eretz B'Nachla. Eretz Yisrael divided by Nachla, by Girdle. Great and larger Shvatim get a larger portion. It's actually B'Chlopas Rashi and the Ramban, how exactly it worked out, whether it's larger Shvatim get larger portions, or whether individuals from certain Shvatim get larger portions, whatever. Anyway, the point is, you have the way in which it's divided. You don't have the details yet in the pasuk. Later on, you have that in Parshas Matis Masei. So that means, because that Sibui is also including the Shlemos, the ultimate Chalukas Ha'aretz, that will be in the times of Mashiach, when we'll have not only the land of the seven nations is going to be divided up among us Jews, but the land of all 10 nations, and it's not going to be divided up just among the 12 Shvatim, but among 13 Shvatim, whereas the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra, Levi is going to get a portion as well, since the Pasuk mentions at the end of Yechezkel, the gates of Yerushalayim, Lasid Lavi, and it mentions Shire Levi Echad, and the Gemara explains that means that Levi is going to get their own independent portion in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, in other words, the pasuk of La'ela Techolik Ha'aretz is not just saying there's a specific kind of chalukah that was done in Yeshua's time. It's also including that there will be a whole new kind of chalukah in a much more shlemistic way when Mashiach comes. Miyad Mashiach. Continuing with halachas of Shabbos. On Thursday, we talked about the halacha about cutting vegetables very finely, Rabbi Ozdeba. pointed out that actually, if you look in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, what he says is, yes, people have a common minhag to do it, but nevertheless, it is better to be careful not to. And also, even when the Alter Rebbe mentions the heter, the fact that people are noyig heter to do it, he mentions things like onions and radishes. So lav dafka anyway, I don't know if dafka would apply to other vegetables anyway, but in any case, the Alter Rebbe does say, even though the fact is the common minhag is to be makel on it, nevertheless, it's still more appropriate to be machmir and not cut them quite so finely. Okay, another halacha. You have certain kinds of foods that salt has an effect on them, not just to make them taste salty, but it softens them or it weakens their like this. They're very hot. They're very hot and spicy, and salt helps dissipate that. So such things you're not allowed to salt on Shabbos because that's like the malacha of ma'abim. So an example would be, for example, cucumbers or radishes or onions, those kinds of things. Even what you need for that soda, you can't salt because of that. What you can do is you can dip them piece by piece in salt and you can eat that. On the other hand, things like eggs or cooked meat or whatever, salt just gives them a salty flavor. So those you're allowed to salt them to eat by that soda, but not for another soda. The Alter Rebbe does say that if there's a particular reason why salting it now will be better, then yesh lahokel maybe to even salt it now for a later meal. But basically in general, only for that particular meal that's coming up now. And then you have also in this connection, he mentions, for example, let's say peas or beans or various things like that. Again, salt helps soften them, so therefore it's included in that example of not salting them because it's l'rakachon, it helps soften them, and therefore you have the problem of mab.